Welcome, everyone, to our Mashiach Matters class. We are holding now Parshas Chayesara Shishi. We completed the subject of Yitzchak and Rivka's marriage, fascinating stuff. And now we're continuing Shishi. This is chapter 25, chapter Perek Chof Hei. Perek Chof Hei in... I just want to make sure that this thing is not going to block... Hold on, do not disturb. Okay, so Perek Chof Hei in Parshas Chayesara. The pasuk begins over here after Yitzchak and Rivka just got married. Vayosef Avraham, and Avraham added Vayikach Isha, and he took a woman, a Shma Keturah. So he marries a woman by the name of Keturah. Rashi says Keturah is Hagar. Vateilad Loi, and she gives birth for him to, I think it's six sons: Zimron, Yokshan, Medon, Midian, Yishboik, and Shuach. Okay, Avram has another six children, and then it goes on to describe these wonderful Enoklach from Yokshan and whatever. Okay, who exactly these people are today's days, we don't know, but they're not necessarily people that we're so proud of. But these are sons and children of Avram. And the question is, the truth is, we don't know. They might be the best people in the world. In any case, that's what it says over here. So, over here, one has to wonder about something that is really, really astonishing. We learned last week that when Yitzchak went out to, when Rivka was coming, Yitzchak went out to a place called Be'er Lachai Roi. What was Yitzchak doing at Be'er Lachai Roi? That's the spring that was named so by Hagar. Hagar, Yishmael's mother, named that Lachai Roi because she saw an angel over there. Chai is an angel. Roi, she saw the angel came to speak to her. So, why is Yitzchak going to the spring or that well where Yishmael and Hagar went, where a miracle happened to them? The answer is because Hagar lived by that well. That was her place. And Yitzchak went to bring Hagar back to marry Avram. So we spoke then that Avram is busy finding a shidduch for Yitzchak. He sent Eliezer. And Yitzchak is finding a shidduch for his father. Now, Yitzchak's age at this time, Yitzchak was 40 years old because he was 37 by the Akedah. Yitzchak was 37 years old by the Akedas Yitzchak, and it's 3 years later, and Yitzchak is now 40 years old, okay? Because he waited 3 years until Rivka is going to be marriageable age. The Pasuk says actually next week's Parsha, Parsha's told us, Vahi Yitzchak ben Arboim Shana, we don't have to make any calculations, the Pasuk says explicitly, that Yitzchak was 40 years old when he took Rivka. When he married Rivka. So at this time, when Yitzchak is marrying Rivka, Avram is marrying Hagar, remarrying her, this woman called Keturah. So, and Avram was 100 years old when Yitzchak was born. That means that Avram is now 140 years old. That means that Avram is now 140 years old when Yokshan and all of his brothers over here are born. So the question is, how come the Torah doesn't make a big deal about this big miracle that happened? It was a miracle already when Avram gave birth when he was 100 years old. Now he's 140 years old. And he's having children. Not one, six. And it doesn't seem that it was one time. It wasn't that they were born sextuplets. They were born six pregnancies. So this is like crazy. Avram, who is 140 years old, is having six babies, probably when he was 140, 141, 42, 40, whatever. Probably up to 150. I don't know exactly what the age is. Avram is having children. Now, one could technically argue and say that the birth of Yitzchak being recorded in the Torah as such a great miracle wasn't really so much a miracle from Avram's side, it was more because of Sarah's age, that Sarah was so old she couldn't have any children. And therefore, the fact that Avram can have children later, not such a miracle, but it was mainly on Sarah. You can't say that. You look Pashat, the Ramban actually says that. The Ramban proves it from this. The Ramban proves from this that Avram had so many children later, that it's not a miracle that Avram had children. The miracle was mainly that that Sarah had a child. However, from Pashtis Aksuvim, from the simple Psukim, if you look in Parshas Lech Lecha, you find that Avram is, initially when Hashem gives him the Besura that he's going to have a child by the Bris Mila, what does it say over there? It says, Vayipoil Avram al Panov, Vayitzchak, and he laughed, Vayoyim Ebeliboy, and he said to him in his heart, Halaben Meyashana Yevaled, can I have a child? Can he, when I am 100? He's talking about himself. And then he says, "Vim Sarah habas tishim shana tele," that Sarah is going to be 90. So you see, it was a miracle on both ends. Sarah too, in the next parsha, when Sarah laughs and Hashem rebukes her for laughing, what does she say? "Achar beloisi haisali adna," after I have already withered, I will become youthful again. "Vadoini zaken," and my master is old. Hashem changes it not to insult Avram, so Hashem protects him by saying Sarah said that she is old. But really she said in her heart, she laughed, that Avram is old. Also in the end, when she finally has a baby, what does it say in the end, the Parshas Vayera, when the baby is born? It says that, hold on, let me finish over here. She says, Mimilel, yeah, if Hashem pocket us, there's a big laugh. V'toyim esara tzchoik osali alikim, kol Hashem yitzchakli, whoever will hear is going to laugh. V'toyim esara says, mi mile l'Avram, who had spoken to Avram, eniku banim Sarah, that Sarah, mi mile l'Avram, ki eladati bein lizkunav, I have given birth to a son to his old age. So if clearly it's mashma that the miracle was also on Avram's part and not only on Sarah. Rashi cannot be learning like the Ramban, because since the pashtus of the psukim, the simple meaning of the psukim is that it is a miracle for Avram as well. If Rashi would have felt that it's not a miracle, Rashi should have stated it separately and made such a big chiddush that it's not a miracle on Avram's part, it's only a miracle on Sarah. In addition to that, there is a Rashi, which Rashi clearly says, that Rashi saying, what's the big miracle that they had children at this age? You look at the earlier generations, they had children when they were 500 years old. Noach gave birth when he was 500 years old. What's the big thing? So Rashi says, after the Deir HaFlaga, Ba'toshes Koyach Le'olam, a weakness, mankind in general, became weaker, and they stopped having children at an older age. Their children was only younger. And Rashi says, Teda, take a look, because all the Yeladim that are mentioned later in the Torah are all at best 60, 70 years old. The father is 60, 70 years old when he has a child. So clearly there is a statement from Rashi that having a baby when one is 100 years old is a big miracle, let alone when one is 140 years old, that's a big miracle. Now, and even if we are going to say, now we're building, okay, the Rebbe always builds a case. And the Rebbe builds a case. He says, and even if we are going to argue and say that for whatever reason that weakness of humanity did not affect Avram, and Avram remained a young, youthful person even at his old age. You know, they had the neurologist of the Rebbe. I just saw a little clip of one of the great neurologists who spoke, and he's talking about after the Rebbe's stroke, he did an exam on the Rebbe's brain. And he looked at it. He said he's looking at his partner, and they couldn't believe what they saw. Generally, in a older person, their brain shrinks. As they get older and older, the brain shrinks. Here they were looking at a 90-year-old man's brain, and the brain was completely a young man's brain. It was astonishing. They'd never seen something like that. It did not in any way get old and shrink. It didn't lose mass. So the guy, the Chabad Shliach, is interviewing him, asks him, "Do you know of any other case?" He says, "Yeah, Albert Einstein's also mind." And people who actually use their brain and really, really, their brains don't get old. But in any case, So maybe you'll say that Avram Avinu, he remained you, but Avram didn't go to the gym. So that itself we need to understand, like, why is he staying? So that, if that itself is a miracle that he remained youthful, but even if we're going to argue that an Avram it didn't affect, here's the interesting thing: till when Yitzchak was born, but later after Yitzchak is born, the Torah says again in Parshas Chayesara of Avram Zaken, Baba Yamin. In other words, the Torah says about Avram's age twice. Va'avram v'sara zekenim. Avram and Sarah were old. And that's in Parshas Vayera. It says already that Avram and Sarah are old. But then the Torah repeats it again in Parshas Chayesara, right before the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka, the Avram zaken. Avram is already old. So now there is again a repetition saying if he didn't get old the first time, and it's Taka Medrash, the Medrash says like this, on the Amar Rabbi Yochanan, it says Va'avram of Sarah Zakenim. Why does it say Va'avram Zakenim? And the answer is because Hashem made Avram young again after he became old. Hashem returned him to his youth to have Yitzchak. So therefore, the Torah is saying a second time Va'avram Zakenim. Now Avram became old. So even if we're going to argue but now the second time Taka means old, and even more than that, Rab Ami says that the reason why it repeats two times old, because the first time he was old, but there was still moisture in him. Kan zikna sheyesh ba lachluchis. Over there he was old, but there was still some lachluchis, some youthful moisture still in him. Vekan bezikna sheim ba lachluchis. Now he became so old that there's no malach luchas, which means he's already very dried out, so to speak. If that's the case, is the zikr a miracle? And yet it says, after Va'avram Zakim, which happened before he sends for Yitzchak, for Rivka to come to marry Yitzchak, when he sends Eliezer, dispatches him. Now it says, Va'yosef Avram, and he marries Keturah, and suddenly every second week there's another Shalom Zachar over here, another six children that Avram has. How can we make sense of the fact that he's having six children? And so obviously it's a big miracle. But why doesn't the Torah make a big deal on this, that it is a miracle? So to understand this, we see something really, really interesting. When Sarah was born, something very, very fundamental, something like really wow. When Sarah gives birth to Yitzchak, Sarah says in Parshas Vayera, Tzchoik asa li alikim. Hashem made me laugh. A big laughter Hashem did for me. Kol hashoimeya, whoever hears about it, Yitzchak Li is going to laugh with me. So Rashi is bothered. Okay, I understand. Sarah is very happy. She's laughing. Not everybody loved Avram and Sarah so much, even though they cry after they passed away. We know the anti-Semitism has been in the world from way back then. That everybody should be so happy. Why kol hashoimeya Yitzchak Li? So Rashi says there was a lot of laughter in the world. The whole world was filled with laughter. Why? Harba akorois nifkedu ima. Many barren women were remembered. Harba choylim nisrapu boi bayoy. Many ill people came out of the hospital that day, got up from their illness. Harba tfilois nana ima. Many prayers were answered with her. Verav schoy koya ba'olam. There was laughter in the entire world. Here, laughter. Laughter in the whole world was laughing. Why was the whole world laughing? The whole world was laughing because there was miracles that were happening all over. And this will also explain something else. It says that when Yitzchak became, when they were born, they made a big party. And the everybody came. And because people were saying, Rashi says, people were saying that they adopted a baby. They found a baby that was thrown into the garbage somewhere, someone that abandoned the child. It's not their child. So in order to disprove this, Hashem made a big nes, that all the noble women came with their babies to the party that Sarah made. And Sarah nursed Yitzchak, and she nursed all these babies. That's what it says. So, if you say that the only reason Sarah was nursing all these Gentile babies, I'm sure, right? These these are babies who later are becoming, you know, whoever they became. It actually does say here that whoever nursed from Sarah, that milk obviously affected them to be decent, righteous people. But in any case, what was the purpose? What was the purpose? If you say the only purpose was to prove that this is not then it wasn't necessary to nurse them. They should just come and witness how she's nursing Yitzchak. If she can nurse, she's the mother. She's only nursed, she has the milk because she's a mother. So that would be suffice. Even if we are to say that maybe to prove it a little better, she's going to nurse a few other babies, fine. Just that all the noble women in the world, as it says, whoever was, I guess, obviously the people didn't cross the entire globe to come, but whoever, everybody came and she nursed all the babies, that seems to be, it isn't necessary just to prove the point. If she nurses all these babies, so we have to say that there is something more than just proving a point. What is the idea? The reason why she's nursing everybody, because that is indicating, and that is very, very clear, that the blessing and the miracle of Sarah is a blessing and a miracle for the entire world. It's not just a blessing and a miracle for their own, it's not a private miracle for their family. It's a global miracle for all people, for all of humanity. And that's why when she's nursing all the babies, because this is displaying that from the hashpa that's coming from Sarah to Yitzchak, from the flow of life that's coming from Sarah to Yitzchak, there's a flow to all of humanity. If this is the case, that the blessing of Sarah brought miracles, it wasn't just for herself, but she brought miracles. And again, when Yitzchak was born, so many other miracles happened to the entire world. It would make sense that just like it happened to Sarah, also happened to Avram. That the miracle was infectious. The miracle was not only a miracle privately for him, for the birth of Yitzchak, but was a miracle that extended to the nations as well. Sarah's miracle affected everybody else in that many other barren women gave birth. Many ill people, that's her birth, that's happening to her. Where do we see that that she's nursing everybody? But where do we see that Avram's miracle that's happening to him, returning to his youth and being able to have a baby, how is Avram's miracle affecting and impacting the entire world? By Avram, the miracle that's affecting and impacting the entire world is the idea that Avram's miracle that's affecting the entire world is that Avram has afterwards babies, and these children are heads of nations, of other nations, which are part of the nations of the world. So Avram is making his contribution, so to speak, to the nations of the world, not only to the Jewish people. However, we need to understand, but over here, we still see, we need to understand this itself. What is the deeper reason for this? What is the content of this? Why is it? I mean, okay, I understand this is what it is. But why is it that our miracle that we are having as Jews, why is this a miracle for everybody? Who needs this? It's nice, but why? Why is it important? Why was this vital? Why did this have to happen? Another thing is we can analyze or try to understand. We see that the way Sarah's miracle affects the greater world, and the way Yitzchak's miracle affects the entire world and the way Avram's miracle affects the world is different. Sarah's miracle happens immediately, instantly. As she's giving birth, babies are being born all over. Or, you know, other women are at least conceiving at that time. The ill people are becoming healed, prayers are being answered. It's happening simultaneously. By Avram Avinu, even though the miracle continues on later, it happened 40 years later. After Yitzchak was born, 40 years later, Avram kind of makes his miracle contribution to the rest of the world by having children that will be fathers of nations. So we have to understand the difference. Why is this immediate? Why is this immediate? And their miracles are only after time, number one. Number two, Sarah's miracle happens effortlessly. She gives birth, and she doesn't have to do anything. Without her work, things are happening in the world miraculous for everyone else. By Avraham Avinu, he had to get married and he had to go have children. So there was a pa'ula on Avram's effect as Avram was going to do something for humanity. So we need to understand what is the reason. So the Rebbe, in a fascinating talk, explains this idea of the miracles. This will be understood by first analyzing another interesting idea. Before Yitzchak was born, Avram and Sarah both had a name change. Initially, Avram is Avram and Sarah is Sarai. And then after, Hashem changes their name. And Avram becomes Avraham. And Sarai becomes Sarah. Now, the simple reason why they needed a name change is because their mazel was not good. So Hashem says, I'm going to change your name. So I'm going to change your mazel. And when I change your mazel, I'll change your, what do they call it, the mazel? Constellations, or the zodiac, or the horoscope. No, I'm looking for the one that people use all the time. That you, what's your sign of? Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. What's your astrological sign? So the change of this sign will enable the birth. That's a simple reason. However, it makes sense to say that it's not only the fact that you needed a name change, but the content of those names are also related to the birth of Yitzchak. Meaning, those names mean something. When Avram becomes Avraham and Sarai becomes Sarah, that's the ingredient that's needed to create a Yitzchak, which is to create the Jewish people. But if one thinks about it, it doesn't make any sense. Because what's the difference between Avram and Avraham? Rashi says Avram means a father only to Aram. Aram is the Jewish people. Ram means an exalted people. So Avram means he's the father of Ram, of an exalted people, which are the Jewish people. Now that Avram becomes Avraham, Av Hamoin Goyim Nesaticha, I have made you the father of multitudes of nations, meaning the father of all of humanity. Avram becomes the father of all of the world. Sarai and Sarah, what's the difference? Sarai means she is my minister, meaning a ministeress, a noble woman to the Jewish people, the queen of the Jewish people. And now she becomes Sarai, she becomes the ministering of Sarah of the entire world. So, but the question is, okay, I understand that Avram and Sarah, they're a beacon of light, they're an inspiration to all of humanity. But what does that have to do with the birth of the Jewish people? What's happening now in their lives? They are now going to lay the foundation of the Jewish people. Ki b'Yitzchak yikara l'chazara. Yitzchak is the father of Am Yisrael. So the Jewish people are being now born. What does this have to do with Avram and Sarah being a light and an inspiration to all the nations? So we have to say that what? That inherent in the birth of the Jewish people, the very, very definition of a Jewish people includes not just a lofty, wonderful nation, but a nation that ministers and has dominance over the entire world. A positive, holy, good dominance, but a dominance over all of humanity. The Jewish people are not here to have a private life of enlightenment and servitude and deep connection to Hashem. We are intrinsically meant to be a people that influence, guide, instruct, and are an inspiration. And A, not only that, but Sarah, you have we're the father of all nations, and an ishtarerus, which means a dominance over all nations, is there from the very, very beginning, from the very inception of Yitzchak. Yitzchak could not be born from parents that are not rulers over the whole world. So Yitzchak is the prince. The Jewish people are the prince of humanity. And that was had to be set at the very, very beginning. Then, now we'll also understand why. When Yitzchak, this was also expressed in Yitzchak's birth. When Yitzchak is being born, a miraculous birth, which means the Jewish people are being born as a miracle in the world, that miracle was not a miracle only for the Jewish people, but it spread out to become a miracle across the world. Miracles were happening everywhere that day. People, that means that everybody can sense that the miracle of Israel is the miracle of humanity, not just the miracle of the Jewish people. That's why intrinsic with Yitzchak's birth, both in Avram and in Sarah, the miracle spreads in a global fashion, not just private. To understand this idea, why this is, that is because we take a look, what kind of ministering effect do we have on the nations? What kind of dominance do we have on the nation? For what purpose? So if you take a look in Rambam, in the influence that the Jews are supposed to have on the nations in the world, let's take a look at Rambam, Hilchos Malachim, in the Laws of Kings, the 8th chapter, Perek Ches, Halacha Yud. Rambam says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu lo hinchil ha-Torah v'mitzvos elo li-Yisrael. You hear this? Moshe Rabbeinu only gave the Torah and the mitzvahs only to the Jewish people. The Torah is not for the whole world. The mitzvahs are not for the whole world. They are for Israel. Shenema Moirosha Kehilas Yaakov. The Torah is an inheritance to the congregation of Yaakov, not to the whole Yaakov. The Yitzchak is already a part into more, but Yaakov is the father of the Jewish people. And whoever wants to convert from the other nations could join the Jewish people. But the actual inheritance, only for Israel. But then Rambam continues, V'chein tziva Moshe Rabbeinu mepi ha-gvura. But Moshe Rabbeinu also commanded us from the mouth of Hashem, Lakuf is kol boi oilam. It is our job to enforce upon all those who come to the world, which means all human beings, it's our job to compel them, lekabel kol mitzvah shenitztav noyach. That they have to accept the 7 mitzvahs that Noach received from Hashem. It means that we are the enforcers of the Zion. It's our responsibility as Jews to compel and enforce the compliance of Hashem's expectations of all nations of the world and their 7 mitzvahs, even though you can think it's their private affair with God. Nothing to do with us. It's Hashem commanding Noah before there was even a nation of Israel. No. By Har Sinai, Hashem commanded Moshe to command the Jewish people that it's our responsibility to look out for the 70 nations and to assure that they are going to keep their mitzvahs. Okay. Rambam continues that if someone is mekabel them, it's called a ger tosha, fine. That's a halach. Then the Rambam continues, and the Rambam says, in the next halach, now hear very carefully, I am emphasizing that this is the next halacha, and we'll see why in a moment. It's not in the same continuation. Rambam continues and he says, Kol ha-makabel sheva mitzvahs, everybody who accepts the 7 commandments, v'nizor la-asoyson, and he's careful to observe them, hareze mechasidei umayso oilam, he's from the righteous of the nations. That means any Gentile who accepts upon himself these 7 Noahide laws, and he's going to observe them, he's called the righteous of the nations. V'yesh lo chelek la'olam haba, and he has a portion in the world to come. But then the Rambam adds a very important stipulation. For hu sheyakabel oisam v'yasa oisam, providing that he accepts them and he does them, b'pnei shetziva bem HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Torah. Because God commanded so in the Torah, v'adiyenu v'adey Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not enough that someone accepts it because he comes to his own conclusion that that's a moral, ethical, righteous way to live, but a person has to accept them because God commanded, and not just because God commanded Moshe at Sinai to the Jewish people, giving them the laws. In other words, not because Hashem commanded Noach, but because Hashem commanded it to Moshe that all nations have to keep the 7 Noahide laws, the 7 Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. But if he does it just because it makes sense to him, not because Hashem commanded it, he's not a ger toshav. He's not from the righteous of the nations. He's a wise human being and he's a good person, but he's not from the righteous of the nations. Fine. This is the statement of the Rambam. Okay, so Rambam is teaching us 3 things we can say over here. Number one, it's our obligation to assure nations will also keep their mitzvahs. Point number 2 is that that when the nations accept these mitzvahs, they ought to do them and accept them because the Eibishter commanded us at Har Sinai, and only then they are Chassidi Umay Sa'ilam. This is so the 2 points. So these are the 2 points that Rambam emphasizes. Now, so let's now back up a second and question this very notion of it. It doesn't make any sense. Rambam said explicitly that the Eibishter only gave the Torah and mitzvahs to the Jewish people. Hashem gave Torah to us, not to the nations. The Torah is our business. It's not the business of the nations. Now, the Eibishter commanded the seven nations, their commandments. That's humanity's obligation to God, is to keep seven. Why do we, as the recipients of the Torah at Har Sinai, why are we responsible for the nation's acceptance? But not just why we're responsible. Why is it that in general that the nations of the world's responsibility to keep the mitzvahs is related to the Jewish people standing at Har Sinai receiving a Torah? This that we, the Jewish people, receive the Torah at Har Sinai, that's our Torah that we got. That seems to be completely independent and unrelated from the global commandment of Hashem to Noah for them to keep their mitzvahs. Why is it that once Matan Torah happened, it's not sufficient for the nations to keep them because Hashem told Noah? It's connected to Hashem giving the Torah to the Jewish people and giving us responsibility to pass on this commandment to them. And the answer to that is, and here's a very important idea. Why? And that is like this. When God created the world, the purpose of creation was for the Torah and for Israel, for the Jewish people. The Bishvil HaToyro Bishvil Yisrael, the Eibishter created all the world. That includes everything in the world, including the French, including the Chinese, and the Japanese, and the Polish, and the people across the world. Every nation and all people in the world were created for the sake of the Torah, for the sake of Israel, keeping the Torah. Since they were created for that purpose, there cannot be anything in their life, any aspect in the lives of peoples of the world that is independent from the Jewish people and Torah mitzvahs. Once Torah and Israel came to the world, which happened mainly at Har Sinai, the definition of everything in the world changes, meaning, till then, you can kind of give them an independent existence, directly with their creator, because it's not yet revealed, the Jew and Israel. The purpose has not yet been revealed. Once the purpose has now come, been realized and been revealed, everything in the world has to synchronize with that purpose. And as a result of that, the nations of the world, their mitzvahs are connected to the Jewish people and Torah. How is that? They keep their mitzvahs because the Eibishter commanded the Jewish people to enforce, to inspire all of humanity to keep their Torah mitzvahs. Like this, everybody is part of that plan. Everybody serving included in that purpose. An independent relationship with God outside of Israel's connection to Hashem doesn't exist. Not in this planet. In some hypothetical other creation that God might have created or will create or whatever, fine, it can be. In this reality that we have now, every single thing in the world is created and related to the Jew and to the observance of Torah and mitzvahs. And that's why their observance, but. Here, however, if we take a look carefully in the words of the Rambam, we see that there is two parts in us, the Jew, the Jewish people, reaching out to the nations and inspiring them to keep Torah and mitzvahs, influencing them to keep. We see interesting idea that there's two parts to it. Since, how do you see two parts? Since the Rambam states these two ideas in two halachos, and this is something that the Rebbe is machadish, that when the Rambam divides a halacha, he's not dividing the halacha just because he wants to make things short. Sometimes there are very long halachos in Rambam. When the Rambam divides a halacha, it's because it's another theme. It's a different idea. The fact that the Rambam says, number one, it's our job to enforce that they keep the Zion mitzvahs, the seven mitzvahs. And in another halacha is where the Rambam says that they should keep it because Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So that shows us that it's not necessarily our obligation to make them keep it because... In other words, The first halach is, we were commanded by Moshe Rabbeinu to influence the nations to keep mitzvahs. Are we obligated to tell them that they have to keep it because the Eibishter told Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai to tell us to tell them? Not necessarily. As long as we assure that they keep it, we've done our job. It's not our chiyuv. Why? Because the Rambam says in the next halacha that if someone keeps it in that very, very noble way, he's from the righteous of the nations. It's not our obligations to make all the people the righteous of the nations. Chassidei Umas HaOlam is a special inyan. If anybody of the nations wants to be from the Chassidei Umas HaOlam, from the great righteous of the world, they can be that. That's not our obligation. Our obligation is we are obligated to have a civilized world, to assure a civilized world for all of humanity. So to us, our influence is what? The influence of making sure the nations, what? Keep their seven mitzvah, their noed laws. Now, stage number two, the nations keep those laws because Hashem commanded Torah is not our obligation, but that too is connected to us. Why? Because why are they keeping it? Notice, why are they keeping it? They're keeping it because the Eibishter commanded the Jewish people. But it's not necessarily our necessity to enforce that. In other words, that aspect seems like is something that the nations in the world come to on their own understanding, that they should do it because the Eibishter commanded Moshe. Although we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. But see, you realize there's two parts. We can sort of say like this. There's two elements in the Jews' influence on nations. One influence is an active influence, one that we are actively involved in doing, is what we call a proactive involvement in which we are obligated to inspire the nations. Either if we have power, the Jews, if we have nations that we've conquered in the days of David HaMelech, David HaMelech made it the law of the land. You get arrested and punished if you're not keeping it. So it was actually enforced. Or as the Tosfos Yom Tov says, today's days when we don't have that power, we still have the power of influence through teaching. And that's even a deeper kind of an effect, because you're changing someone internally, but you're influencing them, that they see that this is a righteous moral way to live, and therefore they're living that way. Fine. But that means our proactive involvement in getting the nations to keep Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. That's one involvement of the Jew in the world. The second involvement of the Jew of the world is he is influencing humanity, he's influencing nations of the world, but he's doing it by his mere presence. Being here is an inspiration to people that they want to have a connection to the Jewish people, but not in a manner of active involvement and trying to teach and change things. It's more of a passive influence, not an active influence. It's similar to the idea that we find the difference between, let's say, David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, two phases in kingship. David HaMelech waged war against the nations, conquered them, and enforced Jewish ideas over the nations that he conquered. Shlomo HaMelech didn't do anything. Shlomo HaMelech was a powerful king sitting in his palace, known to be the wisest of all men. The nations of the world were naturally inspired to come to learn and to see, and they were elevated by him. Not an active influence. So again, we cannot separate. The nations of the world, by definition, need to be connected to the Jewish world of Torah and mitzvahs. Following? The nations need to be connected to the Jews keeping Torah and mitzvahs, because that's their purpose. Not anybody, because they only exist in the context of this purpose. However, bringing that consciousness and that awareness into fruition has two stages. One is an active role that the Jewish people have to change the nations of the world. One of them is an influence that happens passively. These two things we can see, the Rebbe says an amazing thing. We can actually take a look at Rambam, at these two elements, influence of Jews over the nations, over the Gentiles, will also be seen in the laws of Mashiach. At the very end of Hilchos Malachim, there's two chapters, chapter 11 and chapter 12. In Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchos Malachim, he speaks about the work of Mashiach. The Rambam says, what is Mashiach going to do? Hear these words. He says, Melech HaMashiach is going to get up, he's going to return the kingdom of David, restore Torah mitzvahs, build a Beis HaMikdash, and so on and so forth. And hold on. V'yamid Melech. Hold on, where is it over here? Yisakin Olam. I'll just have to find it. Where the Rambam uses the words. Where's the Lashon here? Okay, let me take a look over here because he brings it over here. Hold on, just please bear with me a second. Besayf Perik Yud Aleph. V'kibetz nitche Yisrael v'yisakenes ha'olam kuloi. V'natzach kol umaj. I can't find it in the Rambam that I'm looking over here. Just please, this bothers me. Oh, no. I can't find this lashon. The Rebbe brings it over here. V'yisaken es ha'olam kulei lav des Hashem biyachad. Shenemar, maybe he had a different gears than Rambam. Ki oza hapech la'amim sofa brura likrei kulam b'shem Hashem la'avdoi shchem echad. He says it's in the end of Perek Yud Aleph, but I don't find it in my print version over here. I have to look that up. In any case, in other words, but Rambam is talking about the yisaken. Moshiach is going to be misaken the world. Fine. In the end of Perek Yud Beis, the last chapter, Rambam describes how the world is going to look like when Mashiach comes. Uba'os hazman, there's not going to be any hunger, any famine, any war. And then v'lo yeh esek kol ha'olam kuloi, the world will not be occupied with anything else. Ela l'das es Hashem, only to know Hashem b'lvad. U'lefikach yiyu chachamim gedolim, the people will be great wise. And over here it doesn't say, but the nusach that we have, the lefikach yiyu Yisrael chachamim gedolim. Yidn are going to be great chachamim, v'yoydim dvarim astumim, and they're going to know the secrets. In the beginning, Rambam says, v'lo yehei esek kol ha'olam kuloi, the occupation of all of the world will not be anything else but to serve Hashem. Now, over here, it doesn't say that we're going to be doing that. The Rambam is talking about the status of the world is that all of mankind is going to be pursuing godly knowledge. So the difference between the chapter 11 and a chapter 12, in chapter 11, the Rambam is emphasizing that Moshiach is going to be misaken the world to know Hashem. In Perek Yud Aleph, he seems to be saying, that's going to happen. The world is going to be. But even that, he connects to the Jewish people. Because he says in the very same halacha, the Yidden are going to be chachamim gedolim, very great people, v'yoydim dvarim astumim, which means that the nations are all inspired by divine knowledge is connected to the fact that the Jewish people are such wise people. But not in a man, it's more of a passiveness, not in an active role of influencing it. Yeah, chapter 11 is like David HaMelech, it's like Shlomo HaMelech. It's two pa'ulas. One a pa'ula, but derech pa'ula, an aggressive manner, and one is in a passive manner, in a manner in which will happen on its own. Which, by the way, will also explain, just going to parenthetically, because this is very geshmak, I don't want to lose it, will also explain, Rambam right before this says that the Jewish people did not aspire and wait for Mashiach so that they can dominate the world. They can have, look at these words. The prophets and the chachamim did not aspire to the days of Mashiach. They didn't want to have world dominance. That they should dominate over the nations. And not that the nations should speak highly of them and elevate them. And definitely not to eat or to drink it, so on and so forth. Only that they should be able to sit and study and learn chachma. That's what the Rambam says. So, apipashtis, you learn the simple meaning is, Rambam is saying that we shouldn't wait for Mashiach so that we can have world dominance. But the Rebbe says, does the Rambam really have to tell us that the great wise men of the Jewish people, the Chachamim and the Nevi'im, they were power mongers. They wanted to be rulers over the whole world. Is that what the Rambam has to exclude? Why would I think? He says that even the refined people amongst the Gentiles aren't seeking world dominance. They're seeking knowledge. They want to study. They want to learn. Do we need to tell us that the Jewish scholars and the greatest of Israel are keeping their waiting for Mashiach for world dominance? But the Rebbe explains it very deeply. No. He says, what are we talking about dominance? Dominance doesn't mean over here dominating with force and so forth. Jews were not waiting for Mashiach so that there can come a time that they can be the teachers proactively, aggressively teaching humanity. It's our obligation. We do that. But that's not what we want. We are hoping for the day will come that we will be able to sit and engage in the deepest chassidus, in the deepest divine knowledge from above, and the nations of the world will bederech memela automatically, without us needing to do it, be influenced and inspired to learn and to increase their knowledge. That's what the Rambam means, and that's like a further stage. Initially, there is an influence in which we have to influence. The other one is when it happens, and that's why the Rambam continues in the next halach. In the days of Mashiach, Yidden are going to be Chachamim Gedolim, and Veloye Esek Kola Oilam Kuloi, the occupation of the whole world won't be for anything else, also to know it's Hashem. But that will happen in a natural way, not in a manner that requires our work. This will take us now back to understand the miracle that happened when Yitzchak was born, and why the Eibishter made so many miracles happen. And here is the idea. As soon as Yitzchak was born, many akaris were answered. Babies were born. A barren woman had children. Sick people were healed. And the reason is because, in order, why is the Eibishter making an extra nays? Here's the thing. In order that the Jewish people, what's happening now? The Jewish people are being born. A people that has to guide, inspire, influence, and in a very positive, holy, good way, dominate all of humanity. Be the rulers of humanity in dominating for goodness and for holiness. The nations of the world have to feel in their kishkes that their main existence is the existence of the Jewish people. They have to feel intrinsically connected to the Jewish people and to Israel. So the Eibishter made, and this went in, When the first Jew was born, when Yitzchak was born, this went into the collective consciousness and probably remained in the subconsciousness of everybody. That their blessing and their goodness is coming from the Jewish people's blessings. And you see, the Rebbe doesn't say this in the Sicha, but I can tell you this clearly. You see today's days, and you've seen throughout history, but especially today, how we are so embedded in the kishkes, in the very, very inside of every, of all people in the world. Israel is so at the heart and at the soul. There are those who love us and love and are excited about Israel. There are those who hate and blame every problem on the world on the Jewish people. But here's the thing. People know that we are at fault. And we are at fault. Because we are the cause of the very existence of all of creation, all of being. And people sense that so strongly. And it was felt when Yitzchak was born, immediately their blessings were blessed. The whole world was blessed. And this was an intrinsic feeling. And therefore also, it's similar also, where do we find something similar to that? When the Eibishter gave the Torah, Hashem made so much noise that all the nations of the world, earthquakes, people started, and people said, what's happening? And they came running to Bilam, and Bilam said, the Eibishter is giving the Torah. Why does the Eibishter by Matan Torah have to make all the nations feel? Because it's important. They have to realize that Torah and mitzvahs, even though the Jewish people are the ones observing the Torah, but their existence is kind of a support and part of that project of the Jewish people serving Hashem through Torah and mitzvahs. This will also answer the question, as we said earlier, why these miracles happened. And Hashem, we know Hashem doesn't do any extra miracle. It's not an extra miracle. The miracle of Yitzchak being born, that miracle is the miracle for all of humanity. It's not that the Eibishter added more miracles when Yitzchak was born. It wasn't that when this one was born, another miracle happened. A bunch of miracles came. It wasn't another miracle. Yitzchak's birth, which is a miraculous birth, the birth of the Jewish people, is a universal miracle. That's why Avram has miracles and Sarah has miracles. In it happening in regards to everybody else, the miracles are bringing in other miracles. But here there's a difference between Avram and Sarah, and this is the concluding idea. Since we said before that our influence and dominance over the nations happens in two stages. One of them is more of an aggressive influence, active aggressive influence. And the other one is more a passive, maybe a passive aggressive one, but nevertheless a passive influence on the nations. That's the difference between Avram, the way the miracle happened by Avram, and Sarah. That's the difference. Because it's related to Avram's relationship to the people of the world and Sarah's relationship to the people of the world. Avram is father. A father is someone who's close to his children and very much involved in part of their life. That's a father. A mother, Sarah, the Torah doesn't refer to a mother of the nations. The Torah refers to a Sarah, a Sar, a king. She is a king over the world. A king is separated from his subject, his or her subjects, because the king is transcendent, completely above. These are the two influences that the Jewish people have on the nations. The influence that Avram has on the nations is in a manner that he's involved, he cares, he's doing, he's preoccupied in changing them. That's why we see that in Avram, how did this miracle in which he's influencing the nation, having children, first of all, it happened 40 years later after Yitzchak was born. What does that indicate? That indicates that this is a new action that Avram is doing. It's like, once we have the Jewish people, now the Jewish people are going out to influence the nations. We are preoccupied in teaching the nations the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach and assuring that they're going to keep it. So this is a tikkun that involves our activity. So first of all, Avram has to do something. Secondly, the fact that it happened 40 years later is showing that it's not something that is just that happens automatically, but it involves an action, an activity. It's a new thing. We need to go out and influence the nations. Sarah, however, is referring to that second stage that I mentioned earlier, which the Rambam is talking about all the way in the end, when the Jews are going to be so lofty and so great and so high, it's going to elevate automatically all of humanity, and all of humanity is going to be seeking enlightenment and knowledge just from, without Yidden being occupied. It's just going to be like the spillover, like the Alter Rebbe says in Perek Lamed Vav in Tanya, if you remember the Lashon, he says, "Umi Yisroin Ha'ara," from the influx, from the overflow of the ha'ara, of the light that is going to shine to the Jewish people, yagia choshecha umo iskam, something like that. The nations of the world, their darkness is also going to be illuminated. But that is going to be in a manner that happens kind of on its own without the people of Yidden. And that's the quality of Sarah. As it says in the Pasuk, vayihi ba'ach v'hoyo ba'ach resayam, will be the end of days, nochen yihar beis Hashem b'roish harim, on the top of the mountain, the Beis Hashem, Beis Hamikdash HaShlishi is going to be there. V'naharu elov kol hagoyim, and all the nations are going to flock. V'holchu amim rabim v'omru, and many nations will go. L'chu v'nal el har Hashem, let us go up on their own to the har Hashem, or Beis Elikei Yaakov, to the house of the God of Yaakov. V'yoreinu midrachov, let him teach us. But they're coming alone to be taught, not that it's our involved occupation to go ahead and do that. That's Sarah's contribution as being the queen of all of humanity. Avram is the father, meaning more engaged and involved in the tikkun of the world. By us doing this avoda now, of trying the best we can to influence the nations, very soon, when Mashiach will come, we will be able to go do our business in being Jewish. And the nations will, by that very, very, on their own, be inspired for that elevation. So that's how a little pasuk over here about Avram giving birth to a son, to marrying Keturah, which no one ever noticed, is that in this one little pasuk, till the Rebbe comes along, no one ever noticed that in one this one little pasuk, he's talking about the destiny of all of humanity and the ultimate state of the world when Mashiach will come. Everyone have a good week. Bezras Hashem, see you hopefully in Yerushalayim in the third Beis HaMikdash next week.